Welcome back, everyone, to the Non-Pro Book Club. We are, of course, reading A Darker Shade of Magic, and we're about at the midway point. We're reading up to section 10. That covers a lot of stuff. We're now in the meat of the story, and I cannot wait to talk to you about it. I'm Frank, and I'm joined by James and Michelle and Krista and Gwen. I can't wait to get into it because now we are officially in plot mode. And the most important part of this section is that our two protagonists have finally met. Gwen, you expressed that you loved Lila before. How did you feel when she finally met Cal?
Pretty freaking excited, especially because of the way that they met. She robbed him.
Yes.
Of a magical artifact. That was pretty cool. And then that he was like, oh, no, that's not good. So he like tracked her down and told her about magic. And now she's in this like, oh, my God, magic is a thing kind of headspace. And for someone like her, who's all about like adventure and excitement and wants to be a pirate, like, of course she's going to be like, I need to know more about this. I was pumped about that part, and I am still pumped about all of her persistence in that regard.
James, who would you say the protagonist of this story is?
I don't know. That's a fun question. I think it might be Lila. I definitely been enjoying the two of them together more than I think I've been enjoying them individually. Their interplay is fun because, you know, Kel's kind of wallowing in his self-loathing and Lila's like the opposite of that. So having them play off of each other is great, even though obviously clearly they both have, you know, their own baggage and these big stories. But I'm going to say, I think book one is going to feel like Kel's journey, but I think it's going to set up a bigger journey for Lila over the series. That's going to be my guess.
So if you're looking at this from like the Joseph Campbell hero's journey monomyth point of view, like it has to be Lila who is our protagonist because she starts out in an ordinary world, right? And then she has this call to adventure, right? She pickpockets someone and it's a magical rock. And then he comes after her and he's like teaching her about this magical world. And she's crossing the threshold and going into this magical world. Like, That's the monomyth. That's the whole thing. She's our hero, if that's the way we're looking at it. English teacher moment. I apologize. I'm done.
Yeah, that's definitely my reading too. I mean, she's at very least, she's the one I'm more interested in. This isn't like the gang up on Kel moment, although he does wallow a fair amount. But yeah, I mean, Lila is definitely the person I'm like, all right, now that she's got her foot in the door, I want to see her interacting with this world. So again, because I'm who I am, Lord of the Rings, as soon as Kel is telling Lila to keep the stone safe and hidden, I'm like, oh, keep it safe. That's a thing my brain links onto because I'm comfortable with it. Mish, what do you think?
I'm not really sure who I would consider as the protagonist. I could kind of see it being co-protagonist because I agree with Gwen with the whole hero's journey thing, but it's not her journey, really. Like, she could have just been like, nope, never mind. Like, here's the stone. I'm leaving. I'm not getting involved in this stuff. I'm going to die. So, where it's Kel's...
She accepted the call to adventure.
I know she accepted it. So
yeah, yeah. She's Frodo-ing
this. Can it be equal? Can it be a...
It can, no. Yeah. No, totally.
No, they're both companions. They're both protagonists at the same time. They're both in Red London. They're both in Grey London.
Yeah, yeah. I think I asked and intentionally, like, I just wanted to spill tea immediately. Yeah, this is a very exciting part for me, but it's not all great. I want to kind of address this immediately because I think it's the elephant in the room. What we said on our last recording, we were worried about happening, that there would be, that Lila would just end up being the love interest for our main character, air quotes on that, scare quotes, for Kel. And that seemed like the potential of that bothered all of us to some extent. I couldn't help but be a little, like, just a little angry, whatever it would pop when they shared the kiss right before going through the wall. I'm like, come on, you're better than this. But at the same time, because I'm not better than this, I was also excited by it. So I don't know where I'm going to land on this. Krista?
I am also a little frustrated, and I know where I come down on this. Can we just all leave our squiggly bits at home and, like, have an adventure story?
Yeah.
Please? Can we just do that? Because that's what I'm reading this for.
No, it's a young adult novel. It has a boy character and a girl character. There has to be squiggly bits.
Yeah. I guess that's just
part of the
young adult aspect that it floors me every time I come across it.
It doesn't do that, right? Like, the only thing I can think of in recent memory was Artemis Fowl, and wasn't there even a romance at the end of that series?
There was. James would be all over this if he didn't have to dip, but
yeah, just a little bit of how the sausage is made. James did have to duck out, but I suspect it's because he knew Artemis Fowl was going to be brought up, and he's like, okay, I can't handle it. It's too important to me. It's too important. This has been frustrating me since I was a young adult reading these books. Very often I'd be like, why does there have to be a romance angle to these stories? And I guess to some extent, it's a let's hit all the buttons. We want to check all these. Like, to some extent, it's a publisher mandate, right? They're saying yes, you need to introduce these things.
I think it's being required of writers these days, which is bogus, because where's the romance in The Hobbit? I mean, they put it in the movie. Don't get me started on that train wreck. But
yeah. That was a little interesting, and as shoehorned as it feels like in the, sometimes in the written word, you can sense like this is adding on. I'm not sure where I'm at so far with this. I'm noticing it, which is good, I guess. You know, we're doing our due diligence as a society by pointing out how often this comes up. I do notice it when I'm reading, but at times it's good. It passes under my radar. I was like, maybe this is me. Maybe I'm projecting romantic intent over a innocent kiss before we walk through the wall between worlds. And then I realized that I'm just lying to myself.
There's part of me that definitely reads the kiss more as like, I need to make sure I'm alive and feel alive for a second. And a kiss is a good way to do that before I maybe die. Not so much like, hey, you're cute. Let's kiss.
Oh, it's definitely not like, it's not Twilight, I'm not throwing anybody under the bus. You like what you like, but where the deep romantic intent on everything is overarching every aspect of everything in that story. In this case, it's just there. It could be read in multiple different ways, but I do think that maybe we're just our attempt to cover.
I have romance PTSD.
Yes, that's a good way of describing it.
I do think it's going to be like a thing. I don't know. I just feel like the way, going back a couple of chapters, like the way that they described like Kel's body laying on her bed, like that description felt to me a little bit like, hey, he's cute. Just to let you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we knew what we got into. We decided to do this. So,
hey, Frank, did you notice that he's cute?
I did. He is slight yet strong. His pale skin off the sheets like a marble statue on glass. I don't Michelle, you want to say something?
Yeah, they also, she made the, and she did this more, I think, to make Kel uncomfortable when she made the copy of him and started having it undressed.
That I was like,
that was funny. And that was just her messing with him. That, but she I'm was like, all right, you know, I didn't expect to like what I see, but I like what I see.
Yeah. To be perfectly honest, I'm looking at that and I'm like, this is why this is a bestseller. There are so many fans who are probably going nuts at that scene. They cannot wait for the film version of that to happen. There's got to be
some. You can hear the porn guitar in the background. Yeah,
there's some specialty Yahweh thing going on. Oh my God. That was amazing. Yes.
Focus slightly. You talk about Holland?
Oh, yeah.
What a jerk.
Yes, what a jerk. And also, clear, like, James and I were chatting a little bit about this the other day, and basically, we were saying, like, yes, I get the evil villain music, but also, like, he clearly has the power to do more damage than he did to Kel. So why let him live? And then, like, obviously it's not that he doesn't like killing people, because he had no qualms about killing Baron, right? So mm-hmm.
Yeah, the mystery is played really well.
It's, yeah, well, and he's not, I think it's an important distinction to make, riffing off of what you're saying, Gwen, is that he doesn't like to kill people, but he doesn't have a problem with it, as you said. There's a difference. Yeah, and I think that the way that he's being played is not tipping him over into RKO villain territory, right?
Right. That's more the twins who have the, like, soul seal or whatever on him. Like, they right. seem like they're yeah. killing people.
Those twins are all-time record holders for creepy. White London entirely is... So just a little broader picture. If the first thing the novel has to do is build up this world, I think it does a pretty good job. We talked about that in our last episode, and you're compelled to find out more about it. But, you know, it's nothing if there isn't a story. And right now, the mysteries of the stone, of what Black London is or isn't, who's commissioning this group of assassins and these, like, mindless drones who are out to get, all of that is in Holland, where his allegiances lie or what his motivations are brilliantly handled. I was surprised that you could switch. Like, it's not all world building. I thought halfway through the book, it would still be building these four Londons, but no, we are now full into plot, and I'm here for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Specifically, here's another take for Holland. I read it, not that he didn't feel it necessary to kill, like he can kill, but he doesn't really want to. I actually think that maybe he just doesn't want to kill another Antari. That humans are chattel, but that these special people are too special to be killed willy-nilly.
I mean, there are only the two.
Exactly.
Which begs the question of how do they reproduce, which is, once again, we're dipping into the Yahweh territory. I'm here for it.
They address that in, like, the weird info dump section where Kel is telling, here's all the things about all the places and all the stuff, right? Like, or I think it's addressed there where he's like, "We're it's not a hereditary trait. We just pop up."
Yeah, I thought they said people are kind of just chosen at random.
I was absolutely just writing fan fiction that the two of them are going to get together. But okay, fine. Squash my dreams. Yes.
Love affair.
I'm yeah. sure that fanfic is out there, guys.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it's there. But yeah. What about the rest of you? What do you think?
It's a lot to take in. I feel like we covered a lot in this. But the whole White London, I'm interested to see. It seems like whatever's going on with the rundown, it seems there's a piece of Black London that shouldn't be here and it shouldn't exist. Why is this here? We need to get rid of this, otherwise it's going to cause more collapse. Seems like someone's behind it from White London, and for some reason wanted it to get to Red London, or they wanted it to get to, I can't keep my London straight.
Magic so. London or boring London?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it went from White London to Red London.
Yeah, that's right. This yeah. stone
and
is being...
like, oh crap, I need to get out of here. This shouldn't be here. Ends up in Grey London. Ends up basically dead, but not dead. And now it's like, let's go on our adventure. Something tells me that the twins have to be behind this somewhere, because Holland is doing their bidding. He's basically owned by them in the soul yeah. mark or whatever. Soul pack.
Which is pretty cool. A cool mechanic, yeah. And I feel like Holland as a character is interesting, because he's basically an in-character, unreliable narrator in a mm-hmm. way. His actions yeah. are unreliable narrations on what his intent is. So just because he's chasing Kel and trying to get the stone back, you don't know that he's doing it wants to, or if his bosses want to, or if there's some weird mixture of, like, him following, like a genie following the letter of what he's commanded to do, but purposely not doing it as well as those who would bid him to do it want.
The letter, but not perhaps the intent.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating to do this just by playing with some of the magical rules you established in your world building, saying, all right, this is just, you know, you try to figure it out. Who is Holland? It's not a mystery box where the author isn't telling us the character's intent, and that's the question mark, that's the mystery. It's the mystery is baked into the magic behind him. Because of the way he's being compelled, we don't know. We can't really know until we get more viewpoints from him.
So my husband listened to the whole book on audio. He did not wait for us to get there. And he, when he was in the middle of it, about where we are, was like, so what I don't know about Holland is, like, he's got the you know, soul seal compelling him to do what they say, but they also say elsewhere in the book that he's, like, super powerful and wanted that throne for himself. Like, is there some kind of, like, he's trying to follow the letter of what they say, but twist it so that ultimately he can get rid of them and take back power for himself kind of thing? And I could see that. I could totally see that.
Yeah. Oh, well, I was going to ask about that because, you know, you did your full disclosure about not being all the way up to where we are, Frank. But my full disclosure is I read and then I can't remember what the sequence of events is. I know the story, but, you know, the reading, I mean, so next time we do this, I am definitely not reading ahead. I just can't, because then I'm like, well, did they already talk about the fact that he tried to take the throne? And, like, would I be spoiling something if I, so,
Frank,
yeah.
Can we just, like, spoil chapter 10 for you? I think you said you didn't quite get there.
We can, but to answer Krista's question, they definitely, very early on, actually, in this section, did address that Holland attempted for the throne and then was somehow bested by these two twins who don't, on the surface, seem to have as much power as Holland. But man, are they good at twisting people to their will.
Yeah. Well, and I think we're also getting a lot more hints now about the nature of Black London, that it's like an infection.
Right? Yeah, that's the fear. Yeah.
And that cutting themselves off from it was like the only line of defense. And now you know why, like, White London, like, divested itself of magic, or took so much control that magic decided, magic is clearly an entity, right? And so magic decided to withdraw from White London because it was being abused, you know, in a domineering way. And and so it sort of pulled itself back. But that was the only, I mean, with White London being the next dimension right next to Black London, either dominating or just destroying magic altogether, seems like it's the only way they could have saved themselves from the proximity to that kind of infection.
Yeah, I think, I thought it was interesting. I didn't realize at first until we got into this section that you can't go from whichever London you want directly to the other one you want, that you have to kind of go in order, like it's a stack of cards.
Right.
Brief aside, I love that Lila had to explain that in a better way for Kel. She's like, oh, so it's like you have to go through. And he's like, well, yeah, that's it. That's, you know, go through, sure.
Yes. Yes, through. Sure. That's the thing. Yeah. I thought that was interesting because in the beginning, initially, it seemed like you could just sort of, you know, rotating door, pop your way into whichever one you wanted. I also think it's interesting that he needs a token to travel into the London. So, like, he couldn't have gone to Black London prior, even if he'd wanted to.
Right.
But now he can because he has the thing. But first he has to get through the other Londons, which is why we have this whole thing with the pawn shop guy who screwed over in a game of cards however long ago.
Oh, I have some nerdy things to add at this point. So,
yeah.
All right. So this is where, like, analysis gets thrown out the window. I'm just, like, speculating in world.
Okay.
One, there's, I think there's an argument to be made that I personally haven't quite, like, acknowledged, that the major actors behind all of this could be in Black London. So we don't know what's going on in Black London right now. And we've assumed that White London is somehow behind all this, the sending the agents after Kel and trying to get the Black
throne. But what if it's just that they're the ones next door?
Yeah, maybe they're just the ones who encountered it first. And it's in fact something from Black London attempting to open those doors again, because clearly they hadn't, they didn't seem to have agency behind having those doors shut on them in the first place. So that's really creepy and cool. The other thing is that, the way the tokens work, just the purging, the idea of White London having to completely purge anything that links them up to the point of people, even the magic users that could pass between worlds were mostly killed before someone slowed down and said, oh, wait, hold on. Just such a really, the Stark doesn't begin to explain it. It's really a fascinating world they're building that we spend the least amount of time with. Mm-hmm. And the time we do spend there, I'm immediately like, I want to get out. This is a Harkonnen planet. This is something where I just do not want to see what's happening. Very disturbing. Oh, and one little other thing. I think they did set up that the worlds had to be gone through early on. Mm-hmm. It's a blink and you miss it description.
I clearly missed it.
Yeah, and I only remembered it, and I may be misremembering it, after it was explained by Lila that you go through. I love that the coat is a good symbol of how you go through. Because not like he doesn't unturn, the first time he unfolds his coat, he doesn't just unfold and get the coat he needs. He has to go through a couple of layers to get to the coat he needs. Right?
I'm sitting here nodding. Yes.
Welcome to podcasting where you're like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, okay. And so let's riff on that then, Frank, because that's a brilliant little bit. What if that means, what if the coat is actually a literary metaphor and there are even more Londons,
but more London.
They haven't been able to access them for some reason?
Like Green London.
Yeah.
Like the green coat that he's found but never was able to find again.
Right. Ooh. And Green London has magic and no humanity. It's just, it's Swamp Things the green. Are we crossing enough references here for you?
It has talking creatures.
I'm down for it. I like it.
In the Green London?
Rocket Raccoon is in Green London.
It's actually like Narnia.
It's actually a bunch of ants just walking around.
Narnia and ants were much better references to than my Rocket Raccoon. there's a lot of potential. And that's great world building where you want to spend time in that world, even outside of the story you're in. And I'm hoping that this thing, you know, ends strong. I think Judd mentioned it last time we recorded. Like, I don't know if I could commit my entire life. Like, there's 12 more.
Listen, I only have so much time.
Right. I don't know how many
so
books
the
there are.
This series has to really, like, convince me it's worth it.
You got to land it. And I hope it does. Not because I necessarily want to read 14 more books in the series. I don't actually know how many. But like, because you want to spend a little bit more time for gamers like myself and Krista, I mean, we want to probably play in the setting.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So can we talk about, and I know Frank, you're not quite there. I don't know if Mish, if you're there. So like the guards are looking for Kel. Does that ring bells?
Yeah.
That might be ahead of where the others are. So the guards are looking for Kel, and then they find him, and there's all the drama at the pawn shop.
Yes.
I like want to talk about it, but I also don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't read it.
I'm cool.
I read it, so I'm good.
I'm cool with it at this point. Like I'm maybe a chapter away, and I'm fine with it. I maybe even take my headphones off slightly and think about baseball, which I don't know anything about.
Fly back and don't think of London, Frank.
Oh my god. That's good. So at this point, it feels initially like we have problems with the adoptive family, right? If all of the guards of Red London have like this alert and they're looking for Kel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until we reach the end of that, when we have, oh yeah, we're going to give you your reward, pawn shop owner man, whose name I keep forgetting, even though we just said
Fletcher.
It like 2 minutes ago. Fletcher, thank you. Fletcher.
Thank you.
And then instead of giving him money, they kill him. Which
I literally just read that.
Feels wild. Like maybe not actually sanctioned by the crown, perhaps? Like, I don't know. What do you think? Because I don't know what to think.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's additional guards that are under Holland's control, because isn't that who was originally, it was people who had stolen guards' swords that attacked them in the street?
But we don't know.
That's
it was
what we're
Holland.
Like speculating about. We're not sure. But, seems likely.
Yeah, but, whoever controlled that first set of, although the first set of guards were like,
they weren't really guards. They were.
They just had guard
they
swords.
They were people who had guard swords.
Yeah. I did not trust that Foster family. I'm so sorry. I did not trust that Kel's Foster family. I really hate saying that. I'd rather not be on a podcast saying, I don't like foster parents. But, you know, that specific fictional set of parents, there's something about them that I feel I'm a little wary of. So,
well,
I don't know.
The vibe that he talks about, like they own him, not that he's one of them, but that they own him, right?
And you can't, because it's a young adult novel, you can't tell whether this
is this kid angst or is this for real.
Absolutely, you can't tell. And like a great young adult novels play this for a long time. That was effective. Harry Potter and his relationship with his aunt and uncle, I mean, that was complex, and it lasted a while before he finally, arguably, like in Broadway plays afterwards, when he finally starts to come like more or less to terms with that really complicated relationship. And this is it's a great medium to play with.
His adoptive parents weren't royalty. Like,
right.
That adds a whole other layer of complexity. I also kind of wonder if maybe Rye is somehow connected to this, because there's a moment where Lila's wearing Kel's coat and he sees her from the parade, but he doesn't see Kel because Kel's not there, because he's, you know, two alleys away or whatever. Like, is that why the alert went out? Like, or is it something else?
Yeah, I totally interpreted that as he knows that's Kel's coat.
Mm-hmm.
So who is that?
Right.
Yeah.
And also, where the hell is Kel if his coat is here?
Yes. Yeah.
So this is how triggered I am towards like being suspicious of everything. When Rye stares down Lila, I'm looking at this and I'm like, first of all, my immediate thing is like, this is not going to be another love triangle immediately. Then I'm like, all right.
Oh God,
that.
I didn't even consider that. No. Yeah. Oh no. Thanks, Frank. Thanks a lot.
My brain was like, no, dismiss that. You're being too sensitive. Read this again. And I looked at it. I'm like, oh, so Rye is probably behind this whole thing. I knew you can't trust the character that everyone says you should trust. And then like two pages later, or like a half a chapter later, I'm like, oh wait, maybe he just recognized his brother's coat. And like, this is from Lila's point of view. She doesn't understand why the prince would
stare
notice
her down.
This right. coat, because right. she doesn't realize Kel is royalty. And I'm like, oh, all right, maybe I'm a little wired for suspicion.
I went on a similar journey of thoughts, not the love triangle one that I skipped right over, but I was like, oh, so he knows now that he's back, but he doesn't know where he is. And like, who is this person? Is she a threat? Like, is this like an enemy situation? Or is this just a clue that I need to now send people looking for him because I know he's in the vicinity, you know?
Right, right.
And like, is that search the malicious search that we end up with? Or did that search come from whoever's the stone people situation? Like, or are they the same? Is it connected? I don't know, but I want to know.
Yeah. I'm so happy that Lila got a chance to visit another world. I felt that pang that I don't want to die here is what she's afraid of.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that hits me in my young adult heart. Like I didn't have any relationship angst as a younglin reading these books, but the whole, I need to go out and have an adventure. That was, I was all about that.
Yeah. Being poor in the 19th century. No thanks. Yeah.
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 All right. So we've rambled on a bit. I think we should go around and talk about some of our favorite moments or even, you know, questioning moments. That way, if it sparks a longer conversation, let's have at it. But we'll do a round table.
I got something. I just want to give a MVP shout out to Baron.
Oh,
yes.
Baron.
Yeah.
poor guy when Kel ends up getting hurt. What section was that? Maybe chapter 7 with the follower? You know, he gets hurt. Lilas ends up going back for him. Shoots. Does she shoot Holland in the head, or does it kind of like
graze? No, she hits him with a crowbar. She hits him with like some sort of metal bar or whatever. I thought she was going to shoot him in the head.
For some reason, I thought she shot him. I couldn't. It was hard to follow. I also thought that.
Yeah, they described it as like a glint of steel.
Oh, okay. All right. She threw that at him. Okay. Yeah. I thought she said she had to go back for a gun. I don't know. Anyway, so she's carrying Kel back. He's bleeding out basically all over the place from not a wound, just out of his body because blood magic. And she's raining and dragging him. I'm sure he's larger than her, and starts dragging this guy up the stairs. Baron comes out. Okay, how'd you find him? This is weird. I'm gonna help you and put him to bed. Here's some clothes. I'll leave you alone and not ask any questions.
Good guy, Baron.
Good guy, yeah, Baron.
Yeah.
And then
it is, by the way, I looked it up. It's an iron bar.
So it was an iron bar. Okay.
Whacked him with an iron bar, and then she's like, "Wait, let me find my gun." Oh my God, like, can you stand? You're falling down and bleeding everywhere. All right, let's go.
So, and then he came to such a sad end. So he got his big old shotgun and he's like, I'm going to shoot this guy. It looks like the guy Lila warned us about. And no bueno.
He literally was as brave as you could possibly be. Yeah. Having no magic or anything. He's one of those characters that definitely is a call out. Yeah, I like that.
From a gamer standpoint, he did all the right things. And he got nailed anyway.
Yeah, it's when your favorite support character still ends up getting killed.
Yeah. He gives poor kids in the street soup. Like, yeah, he runs a tavern, but he's like that quality tavern
so owner. In a way, just like Baron is effectively like, so my feelings with Holland is he's cool. And in fact, I do have a question for the end before I forget. I really like Holland, and he's one of the characters I'm most interested in. I wasn't sure if I hated him until he killed Baron.
Yeah.
And then I'm like,
he was all interesting.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting, but because now, like, he is cruel to Kel and to Lila, but for some reason I'm still debating it because of like I don't know what his intentions are or what he's able to do, really, what his compulsions are. So when he decides to kill Baron, and it doesn't come off on the page at all as if he had to, he just does it. Then I'm like, oh, this guy's a real
creep. It feels creep. Biteful.
Yes. Or dismissive.
Wrong answer.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't matter.
Yeah. I'm telling you. He just wants to, he doesn't mind killing humans. Because I think it's going to be, we're going to find this a thing about our
you might be least right.
favorite hero. Okay, so Chrissy, you got something you want to call out?
Yeah, you know, this is gonna seem really weird, but that little tiny chapter with that stupid guy in gray London where he comes
Ned.
He comes back to the inn and it's closed because, you know, Baron's dead, right? And he has this fantasy about, you know, what his interaction with Kel is going to be like. I mean, how many times have I not done something like that in real life in my own head? I just thought it was brilliant and completely human and totally stupid and like, wow.
Doesn't do that though? Like, who doesn't psych themselves up for a meeting and like go through in their brain like, I'm gonna say this and they're gonna say that and I'm gonna say this and it's gonna be really funny and clever and great when I say this and then we're gonna be best friends.
It's like a fanfic in the book.
Oh, yeah. Yes, exactly. But it's also like what you do before going on a date too, like not just
100%,
but like dating. So, you know, like, oh God, that was the thing that really jumped out at me in this last section. I mean, there's so much great stuff, but that was the thing that really caught me, was that little piece of author insert fanfic.
All right, Gwen, it's the camera's on you.
Okay, so I thought about it a little, and I think we already talked about it, but I still just really like when Kel is coming to, and he's like, wait, but this wound, it couldn't have healed itself so quickly unless, and then Liza's just like, yeah, I stuck this goo on it. And he gets so annoyed at her. Like, you don't know what that is. It could have been poison. And she's like, but it obviously isn't. So, like, chill.
Annoyed, impressed. He's annoyed, impressed because she also tested it on herself.
I know.
Which is very, like, dangerous, but also cool. Like, yeah, yeah.
It felt like a very good mini moment where it's like, here's who these people are.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
Nice.
Like, at their core, here's who they are.
She's a risk taker, and she likes it.
She is willing to take risks. She's willing to try new things. And he is irritated when people mess with his stuff.
All right. So I have one last question for us before break. And I guess the next time we meet, we're going to be wrapping up the story. For me, the breakout character in this moment is, I guess, Holland. Because I like a good villain, and this is a very interesting villain, because you can't even tell if he is a villain. So, who would you cast as Holland in the film version of this?
Okay, so he's supposed to be, like, kind of shabby and pale, right?
Yes.
Huh. Oh,
I gotta think. Older. I picture him as being older, too.
Me too, yeah.
Hugh Laurie. little too old.
What about Anthony Hopkins?
He does do a good villain.
I can see him with like that faded look.
Yeah, I like it. That works for me. It's interesting that many of us are thinking an older actor for this.
I would posit two options. I mean, I think Anthony Hopkins could be good, but either Julian Sands or Jason Isaacs.
Oh wow, both are amazing. Both would be so good. Oh, Jason Isaacs, probably most popular for, I guess, for a book
Harry
club
Potter. Would be,
yeah, Harry Potter. He's Lucius Malfoy. Julian Sands, Boxing Helena.
I'm gonna Google him because I don't know him.
So he's in Boxing Helena. He's
the
warlock.
He's known for The Killing Fields, A Room yes. with a View.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I like his hair.
And Jor-El in Smallville.
Oh, was he? I didn't know that. Oh, cool.
Well, that is what the internet is telling me. So.
All right. Well, keep that website up because here's another deep cut for me. David Warner. All right. He's an English actor.
Yes.
He plays, it would have to be like a younger David Warner because he's been around for a while. He was in, I can't believe I'm going with this as the most famous. He was in The Omen, but I think Time Bandits.
Bandits,
I just Googled
yes.
him and like a picture just popped up.
Yeah, he's been in a
Star Trek
things.
TV.
he's the bad guy in Tron, if that means anything.
The original Tron.
Yeah, I really think for some reason I'm picturing him the entire time, especially his delivery in Tron is kind of like distant and disdainful.
I could see him, but younger.
Yes. Yeah. A younger him or for me, a younger like Blade Runner era Rutger Hauer. I could definitely see that.
Yeah.
Probably on the strength of Blade Runner alone. All right, Mish, what do you got?
Oh, I said Hugh Laurie, but I was half kidding.
It got cut off for me. I heard everyone's reaction, but not what you...
Oh, yeah. You get that nice limp like Dr. House, you know?
Oh, Tom Tragic. Hiddleston.
I was also going to say Tom Hiddleston, because Loki. Nice.
Tom Hiddleston can do anything.
Yeah. So.
Yes, yeah. Obviously.
So, I don't know. I feel like he's not that much older than Kel. You know, I feel like he's like, Kel's probably in his, what, early 20s?
I feel like he has to look old,
and
though,
then,
because of the whole, like
because
white
of
magic,
the whole, like,
yeah,
stuff,
the
yeah.
worn.
He's
like, cut and look
faded
worn.
And worn, and...
So, but he's probably only, I think, I'd estimate maybe he's, like, 35 at most.
These books have been out for a while, and there's a lot of fanfic. The fanfic definitely looks like they're casting them opposite one another in a romantic anime. But, so it's interesting that we're thinking of them as older. And I think it's part of that is that the kind of aged and worn aspect to them.
Yeah,
That's definitely why I'm thinking older.
Yeah.
Not because I think he is older, but because I think he looks more like he's aged, you know?
And I feel like I've aged as well with with the amount of time between our different episodes of this. We are going to get through it. I think we've got one more podcast proper to get through after we finish wrapping the book. We hope you're reading along and enjoying it. I know most of the people who have been messaging me on Twitter have actually been well ahead of us. So screw you, folks. You're not getting any extra credit. Some of us have podcast editing to do.
And some of us have a lot of anime to catch up on, too.
We maybe did a lot on our plates this week.
The end of the school year, guys. I got finals to grade. So.
Oh, man. It doesn't matter. We're still doing this. We got to work on what our summer reading will be. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Ooh,
very excited. Does anybody have any parting words they'd like to share about this section of the book? Or are we good for wrapping up?
I have 3 pages left, so all I can say is actually, I do think it is the royal family, but I don't think it's has anything to do with Rye. I don't think Rye's involved in it because I'm reading
think it's
that
the brother.
I don't think he
you
knows.
Think it's maybe like the parents.
I think it might be the parents because it seems like the guard is in on it, but not the guards that are close to Rye.
Mm. Interesting.
Right. Yeah.
Ooh, bad things happened to those guards. We didn't talk about that.
No, hold on. Parrish. We can talk about it in like 3 minutes if we want to.
Oh, Parrish and
if Frank doesn't mind pausing mildly.
Oh, I think we got to leave this as a cliffhanger for our next episode.
All I'm gonna say is that something I said earlier in the podcast is germane. Now, I didn't mean to do it, but I did it. It's germane to what's going on. So that's all I'm
saying. Oh, God.
Oh, God. Did you get there, Michelle?
God, I did.
Yes.
Yep. Now?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Good night, everyone.
Are we doing this?
Drama llamas, guys. Drama.
So, yes, that drama makes you finish reading the book. Everybody do it. Finish reading this book. Let us know what you think. I think we're going to do a couple more casting calls, probably either in the fan club or on the Discord or both. Hey, why
definitely
not?
I want to hear who people think should bring these characters to life for stage.
Yeah.
Honestly, Holland was fun, but Lila would be really interesting.
That's going to be tough.
So many good ways. It's almost like you can't go wrong. There's so many good people who could be in this role.
Hollywood
and whoever
full
it is.
Of fierce, fabulous ladies ready to be Pirate Lila.
Just not Cara Devilish. I don't like her.
Take that, wherever that is.
I forget how to spell her. It's Delavine. Like Delavish. I'm tired of her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm going to look her up.
She's got the intense eyebrows, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was in John Green's movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just kind of over it.
This went strangely targeted at the end.
I'm okay with it.
I really hope she just like is listening and is like, what happened?
She's a lovely actress, I'm sure.
Yeah, she is. I just wouldn't like her as this character.
Just not right for Lila.
No. I feel
like
Hollywood
directors have decided. You know,
Hollywood would want her in this character role, though, and I don't.
All right.
Because she already ruined one good female character for me. I don't need another.
Take that.
Take that.
Shailene Woodley.
Oh, God, yeah.
The same young actresses they cast in everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll talk more about this.
We need more diversity.
On the Facebooks and the Twitters and
yes.
the things.
Yeah, we absolutely.
And the things. Yes.
All right. Thank you all for listening. Please like and subscribe and do all things. All right.
Bye.
I love how angry that ended. Perfect.
Got a little fired up there.
Oh my god! I'm on the last page. This is terrible.
Right? Isn't it bad? It's terrible. I told you bad things. Bad things happen.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.